Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the great stuff that you guys are doing for the community. That's for sure. Folks, this program is sponsored in part by Teamsters Local 406 and the United Auto Workers 1D. We appreciate their support. Joining us today from Flint Rising, we have Naria Sharif. She's a grassroots organizer dealing with the water issues in Flint, Michigan. We've talked about this a number of times. Naria, welcome to the Union Edge.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today. We appreciate you being here. Talk to us. You were just here in Pittsburgh. I don't know. Are you still in Pittsburgh right now?
Yes, I'm still in Pittsburgh.
Okay. This is an issue that we've talked about a lot on this radio program. We have friends with Teamsters Local 406 up in Grand Rapids, the United Auto Workers Region 1D. Both have been working with other unions to literally truck tractor trailer loads full of water over to the residents of Flint to try and provide some relief. And I have to ask, where are you guys at this point in time?
Well, unfortunately, we're still living our lives with bottled water. There has been a recent settlement where there will be a 3-year timeline to replace the lead and galvanized iron service lines, but we're still paying for water that we cannot drink out of our taps unfiltered.
That is incredible. Now, let me ask you this. I understand that there was a spike in lead levels, but is it now safe enough to bathe? Is it now safe enough to wash your wash dishes, wash clothing, that kind of stuff?
Well, in Flint water, we have a variety of other issues. We have biological contaminants that's in our water. And because of the overchlorination of our water, many people are getting rashes. So a lot of people are using bottled water to bathe.
What has the state, what has the water authority, who was run by one of the governor's cronies, said that they're going to do? I mean, because if you're having to go through this for a number of years, that's not appropriate. And why are you still having to pay for it if it isn't potable?
Well, the state has still not owned up to the role that they've played in our water crisis by having an emergency manager to take away the democracy of local residents. And they're still making decisions based on dollars and cents and not human life.
I'm sorry. For me, this is incredible, and I've been somewhat inoculated to some of the issues you guys have been dealing with. As a taxpayer, as a citizen, you're paying for certain basic services, i.e. water and sewage, but yet they're not providing it, but they're still billing you for it.
Yes, actually, next week we're bracing for water shutoffs for people who either cannot afford for the extremely high water bills, or they refuse to pay for a product that they cannot use.
Are they shutting off the water to businesses or just residential?
Residential.
Okay, so let me mull that one over for a minute, and I can't even begin to imagine what the residents of Flint are thinking right now. But let me turn this around a little bit. Talk to us about Flint Rising. How did you guys form?
Well, we actually formed with a canvas to the undocumented Spanish-speaking community because they did not know that there was a crisis. And the state did not have any materials translated in any language other than English. So we got some people who spoke Spanish to go to the area where they live to communicate with them. And then also realizing that the state was not sending people who lived in the poor communities. And we felt like we really needed to create like this umbrella for people to get accurate information and then organize for this long-term struggle for justice and reparations. And we have a local table where there's residents, and then we have a broader statewide coordinating table where a lot of our labor partners sit, and they've been extremely helpful as far as, you know, like getting water to residents and doing like water deliveries and like health fairs and other things. And I would like to thank, you know, like all of labor for committing to bring water to Flint because we really needed it.
I you know, while I'm not one of the Teamsters that actually brought the water to you guys, I have to tell you that our brothers and sisters, our community members and our friends in Grand Rapids with Teamsters Local 406, they had a conversation with their signatory employers. One of them was a water bottling company who also donated. I know that other unions were putting money together to purchase additional water and other needed supplies. I got to tell you, our union brothers and sisters are very, very proud to be part of the solution. I understand that the building trades are coming out and helping with the from the house and inside the house plumbing and out to the street. And I hope that's being effective there.
Yes, the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters Union and LOUNA have really been helpful, like really helpful advocates and really being part of the solution. And creating like training programs so Flint residents can get into the apprenticeship pipeline to be part of the solution to rebuild our community.
There you go. Naria, I have to ask, are you a union member by any chance?
Unfortunately, I've never had the opportunity to be a union member, but my entire family are union members.
Okay. So you've got some idea of the greater family that's out there trying to help, and that's a good thing. I wonder how many residents of Flint have not been a union member that weren't quite sure what a union member was all about, who have now perhaps changed their mind as to what union folk are really all about.
Yeah, well, we have, like, a huge retiree chapter with the UAW. So even though, like, there's a lot of people, they may not be active union members, like, there's somebody in their family that belongs to one of the unions.
Good deal. That's an important thing. Listen, we need to take a short break, but when we come back, I want to talk to you about some of the parallels between Pittsburgh and Flint. And your concerns and everybody else's concerns about privatization, okay?
Okay.
Fantastic. We'll be back here in just a little bit. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
It was 1973. Helen Reddy's song, I Am Woman, was at the top of the charts. The feminist movement was in full swing. A group of Boston women office workers started talking about how they were treated at work, how men made more money for the same jobs, how they couldn't take time off to care for their kids without putting their jobs at risk. They were feisty, empowered, and fed up. They founded 9 to 5, a membership organization of women working in low-wage jobs, inspiring a national hit song and movie. Whether it's fighting for better leave policies, for equal pay for equal work, to ban the box, or strengthen the safety net, 9 to 5 is on the front lines of putting our issues on the public agenda, and they're winning big. Find out more about how they're raising the bar at www.9to5.org. That's the number 9, T-O, number 5.org.
So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated.
The library!
On Jones' house.
The bus stop.
And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are. Great. It sounds like we don't have a plan.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Sheet Metal Workers Local 12, reminding you that sheet metal is vital to technology and manufacturing in nearly every industry known to man. Sheet metal workers gain knowledge and skills in all aspects of sheet metal manufacture and fabrication, leading to a variety of career opportunities. The Sheet Metal Workers Local 12 is now accepting applications for apprentices. Requirements include a high school diploma or GED and a Pennsylvania driver's license. More information can be obtained online at smlocal12.org. That's smlocal12.org.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the wonderful things that you're doing for the community. Right now we're talking with Naria Sharif. She is an organizer with Flint Rising. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate you being with us today. You know, I got to tell you, what you guys have been up against for far too long in Flint with this with the water situation and the contamination situation that was just simply created because somebody wanted to save a buck is horrific. And my question to you is what should we as consumers, as citizens, as taxpayers be concerned about when there's this headlong rush to privatize basic community functions like water?
Well, I think that, you know, you have the zeal of folks who want to, who treat like basic services as commodities. And hopefully that's okay. And I think that also one of the things that we need to really like hammer home is that privatization is not better. Having stuff that's publicly owned, you're able to hold people into account. And the public sector definitely does it better because you have people who are trained and their motivation is to provide a service and not to extract profit.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's worrying about the community versus worrying about the next quarter. What are you guys doing in Flint to fight back against this, and what's effective, and what should other people be doing?
Well, right now we're organizing to stop water shutoffs and exploring other partners to maintain public ownership of our water plant, because usually when they contract these out, the first thing that they do is they like fire all like union employees and bring in people who are making like low wages. So we really need to do like a lot more education to tell people that even though this may be kind of a short-term profit, like you're basically like the private corporations are making their shareholders happy and not people who are using the water.
It's amazing to me that the stockholder or the taxpayers in Flint paid to build the water infrastructure. Now you have politicians that think it's okay to give it to somebody in the private sector who can now turn around and get this for pennies on the dollar and turn it around and turn this into an improv or for-profit run enterprise. And the very people that paid to have it built are the ones who are getting stuck with somebody else's bills for the profit.
Yes, these public-private partnerships, is the public is investing into it, and the private sector is profiteering from it.
Right. You talk about education. What do people say when you tell them what's really happening?
Well, people, at least like in Flint, like when I talk about Flint, like people are shocked because we never stop being charged for water because we still have our state, the governor and his cronies, they have the ideology where they're still making decisions based on dollars and cents, and we're continuing to be shortchanged, and people are just absolutely incredulous when I say that we never stopped being charged for water. Like even when it made international news, we were still getting a monthly water bill for water that wasn't even fit to flush the toilet.
Right. And on top of that, you can't sue the government. You can't sue the governor because they're providing you with a toxic product.
Yeah, so we're basically stuck.
And you can't sell your house because anybody who wants to buy a house wants to have clean water to go with it, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, people, like, their property values have gone into the toilet. They're unable to make repairs because it's extremely expensive to try to do that sort of replacement. I know someone, they had to replace their hot water heater 3 times within a year because the water basically corroded their hot water heater.
Right. And imagine having to replace all of the plumbing and pipes in your house because that's what you have to do.
Yes.
And our
state is like they're going to have $1 billion rainy day fund. But this rainy day fund is for the bondholders and the bond rating and not to repair what happened in Flint.
What is this doing to people's resolve about voting?
There's a lot of people, like, they're extremely angry. I would say, like, the water crisis, what happened in Flint, because the same time that this was happening, we had a mayoral election, and the incumbent was ejected because he was in the state's pocket, and we were able to elect a new mayor. But a lot of people now, like, they're very distrustful of state government because the state lied to us. And you have a lot of people, like, that are traumatized because they believe the state's narrative and the state lied to them.
Governor Snyder is done. This is his second term. Has somebody in Michigan come out as an appropriate replacement for him?
I'm not sure. There have been a few people who have expressed interest. There may be even more by next year. But regardless of who's running, like, they need to fix Flint, because this is going to be a multi-generational issue, and we still do not have the necessary resources that we need to survive.
What would you like everybody else in the country to do to help?
Well, if anyone would like to donate towards the organizing efforts and getting more people educated around the water crisis, getting more Flint residents educated, they can donate to Flint Rising. And if you go to flintrising.com/donate, you can donate to that. There's also flintkids.org if someone wants to donate towards resources for children and other programs that's focused on kids, so they can donate to that as well. And I would say, finally, like, guard your own public water authority and maintain public ownership.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Any final words for us today?
No, thank you so much for having me on the air.
We appreciate it, and thank you for coming down to Pittsburgh to tell us what's going on in your neighborhood. Quite honestly, if there's anything at all that we can do to help, don't hesitate to reach out, because, like I said, we broadcast in Michigan daily, and we're happy to help get the word out.
Thank you so much. We're in this, like I would say, the early beginning stages of this long-term struggle for water justice. And many more communities are going to have to face, like, these issues around water affordability and stopping the privatization of water. So we all need to band together to stop that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we appreciate that very much. And, again, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Folks, I got to tell you. Somebody in Michigan, Flint, Michigan, decided that they weren't even going to bother to try and do the appropriate things with making sure that the water was safe. And they've harmed a lot of kids. You still can't drink the water. You can't sue the government. There's going to come a time where, I mean, my God, what are you going to do? And this is all because of privatization. And this was all because of the governor decided that he was going to put his cronies in charge and not have the duly elected people that live in that community be responsible for the decisions that are made. It's incredible. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.